Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. When someone does you a grievous wrong and you had no part in causing the wrong, how should you respond? Today, more of a story about a conscience seared by sin and another conscience plagued with shame as a result. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Now we continue a series on the power of a clear conscience. Turn to 2 Samuel chapter 13 as we tell the story of Tamar, attacked by her brother through no fault of her own.
So what happened is this. She asked this question in verse 13, "Where could I carry my shame?" It's enough to bring tears to your eyes. What's she going to do with her shame? Where will she park it? How will she take her backpack that is going to be loaded on her as a result of something that wasn't her fault, and how is she going to deal with it? Well, what happened is this. Amnon did violate his half-sister. And then it says in verse 15, he hated her with very great hatred, so that the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he had loved her. In abusive families, what you find is, particularly regarding sexual matters, hate and lust sort of go hand in hand. And you know what she does? And we'll hurry to the conclusion here. Now she was wearing a long robe, verse 18, with sleeves, for this is what the virgin daughters of the king were wearing. So his servant put her out. She was cast out of the room. The door was bolted, and Tamar put ashes on her head and tore the long robe that she wore, and she laid her hand on her head and went away, crying aloud as she went. And then I'm skipping now to verse 20. So Tamar lived a desolate woman in her brother Absalom's house, and that's apparently where she lived for the rest of her life. This beautiful woman, ruined by shame, not because of what she did, but because of what someone else did. And what did David do about it? You'll notice verse 21, when King David heard about these things, he was very angry. Well, good for David. Why didn't he step in? Why didn't he begin to adjudicate? Why didn't he begin to defend her? Why didn't he take care of Amnon and all the evil that he had done? I'll tell you why. The previous chapter is David having committed adultery with Bathsheba, I guess it is. And I'm getting Beersheba. There is a place like that in Israel mixed up with Bathsheba, but they are different. And then he murders Uriah. So he had lost all moral authority when it came to this issue. And so he becomes angry, but he doesn't do anything about it. Just like some homes today where the father becomes angry, but doesn't know how to control his dysfunctional family. So that's the story. Now the question is, how do people deal with guilt and shame? If we don't deal with it biblically, what happens? Well, how do we manage these consequences? First of all, there are those who become addicted to failure and addicted even to abuse. You find that abused women, if they were abused as children, they may indeed end up marrying an abuser. And you say, well, how can they do that? Well, you can go online and you can study this and you'll find out that there's an addiction to abuse. In other words, they feel to themselves, I am so defiled, I am so unworthy that I deserve somebody who's going to abuse me. Happens over and over again. So they become addicted to failure. There is such a thing even as learned helplessness. They have the opportunity to change. They have the opportunity to walk away and they will not. It's a terrible state to be in. Let me also mention that oftentimes the result is compulsive behavior, latent anger, always dissatisfied with themselves, unable to relax. Let me just list a number of different consequences here. For example, compulsive washing of hands. I think it's 2 or 3 weeks away, but I'm going to preach a message entitled Why Lady Macbeth Didn't Have to Commit Suicide and Why You Don't Have to Either. And we're going to give explicit instructions on the cleansing of the conscience. But you remember, she was the one who kept washing her hands. And she said at one place, even if she would wash her hands in all the rivers of Arabia, the rivers would become bloody, but still her hands would not become clean because she had murdered the king. Wow. All of that. Now, in her case, of course, that was objective shame, objective guilt, but God has an answer for that too. And so what you find is young people sometimes cutting themselves. They feel so guilty. They feel guilty for simply being alive. They feel as if they should not have been born because they have been so belittled and so devalued because of their upbringing or because of their relationships, even as Tamar. Perfectionism. What happens now, the perfectionist wants everything absolutely perfect so that within him, within his hollowness and his fear of being exposed and as being seen as inadequate or being seen, figuratively speaking, as naked, everything has to be perfected, but at the same time, never happy with everything. And so on and on the cycle goes. And then what you have is paranoia. You know, a paranoid person, and then you have those extreme examples of paranoia, but you also have paranoia oftentimes in the most natural relationships you discover it. Because you see, the paranoid person is saying to himself, I expect to be betrayed. And if you criticize me, I assume that you're an enemy and your intention is to betray you, and you're actually connected with other individuals, and all of you are setting out to destroy me. All of that because of the feeling of being empty or being seen as less than we want people to see us. And as a result of that, goes into paranoia. Creation of false worlds, therefore. A false world. A world in which even they become the hero because they do not want themselves to be known by anyone. So all of this denial, all of these defenses are built with deep care, and denial goes down deep into the roots and into the cellar of their lives, and there they are. I'm praying today that God will enable all of us to put down our defenses and to allow His grace to bring healing that no other relationship can really do. And then what you have is the power addict, the control freak. What he is doing is he's making sure that there will be no further shaming in his life. And so he wants to make sure that if he can control his environment, if he can control other people, then indeed he will be satisfied and never be shamed again. Now, what does God have to say about all this? There are two passages I want you to turn to very briefly. One is found in the book of Isaiah, Isaiah chapter 61. Isaiah chapter 61. You'll notice that God here is speaking to Israel, and I understand that. This application goes to Israel first. But I think that this is what God does for His people even in this age. You remember that Tamar put ashes on her head. It was a sign of her humiliation. It was a sign of her helplessness. And she felt herself locked into that lifestyle, so she lived desolate for the rest of her life. But notice what God says in verse 3, and this follows the words of Jesus. Most of these words were recited when he was in the synagogue about the Spirit of the Lord being upon him to anoint him. And then it says, verse 3, to grant to those who mourn in Zion, to give them a beautiful headdress instead of ashes. God says the shame of the ashes can be taken away, and you have a beautiful, beautiful garland to wear, which is really what the Hebrew text means. The oil of gladness instead of mourning, the garment of praise instead of a faint spirit, that they may be called oaks of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that He may be glorified. Want to see yourself here. Think about you being in that state of shame. And God says, you don't have to bear that because I'm covering it. I am giving you a garment, a beautiful garment. And goes on to say, but you shall be called priests of the Lord, verse 6. They shall speak of you as ministers of our God. Verse 7, instead of your shame, there shall be a double portion. Instead of dishonor, they shall rejoice in their lot. There you are. The shame is taken away. And then you'll notice in verse 10, I will greatly rejoice in the Lord. My soul shall exult in my God, for he has clothed me with the garments of salvation. Let me simply encourage you by saying this, that God in his mercy and grace knows your need. He knows the part that you played in your shame and in your guilt, which would be objective shame and guilt, and he also knows the part that other people have played. And he knows that it's not all your fault. And today, no matter what the purpose, or rather the source of that shame and guilt may be, I want to encourage you to see God bigger than that. I want you to understand that in his grace and in his mercy, he can meet you in your need so that you would have a pure conscience and a sincere faith. I want you to take your Bibles and turn to one other passage today, and that is found in the book of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 12, where the scripture says these words. Chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. What the writer of Hebrews is saying is that when Jesus died on the cross, he scorned the shame connected with a cross. As he was hanging there, he knew that it was a shameful experience. He knew, in fact, that he was being cursed, because cursed is everyone who hangs upon a tree. But just like he was bearing our guilt, he was also bearing our shame. He was bringing about a deliverance that would go down into our hearts so that we would be free and say we no longer need to carry this.
My friend, this is Pastor Lutzer. What do we do with our shame? What do we do with a condemning conscience? I remember a man who could not move ahead in his spiritual life because he had fathered a child when he was in college that his wife didn't know about. God desires that we have a clear conscience. What do we do? I've written a book entitled The Power of a Clear Conscience. Let God Free You from Your Past. I believe that this resource will be of tremendous help to you.
Dr. Erwin Lutzer with more of It's Not All Your Fault, the second in a 10-part series on the power of a clear conscience. Next time, how the Bible gives us a way to be free, even of guilt we did not cause. Your support makes Running to Win possible. And to say thanks for your gift of any amount, we'd like to send you Dr. Lutzer's life-changing book, The Power of a Clear Conscience. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw.com. Or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.